So there were a few direct questions to me with notes, and even someone who came up to have some understanding about how to relate to thoughts in a wise way. And so I thought of speaking about this tonight in relationship to the practice, and naturally a practice where we have a sense we are being able to be present with thoughts, a very kind of challenging relationship always for ourselves. The Buddha says, mindfulness liberates. The Buddha, my friends, it is through the establishment of the lovely clarity of mindfulness that you can let go of grasping after past and future, overcome attachment and grief, abandon and clinging, all clinging and anxiety, and awaken an unshakable freedom of heart here and now in relationship to all experiences. So there's a real invitation to take to heart that anything is part of the practice. And I think that most of us come to meditation because of an interest in this development of the mind, right? There's no kind of way that we won't understand that, of course, we spend a lot of time with body just to stabilize the quality of awareness of presence. And then the whole work is about, you can say, being in a relationship with mind, which is not challenging, not overwhelming, but really balanced and freeing. Liberating the mind from clinging. So the purpose is not just concentration, because I think many people come to practice for concentration, because of course concentration is very pleasant. And I've done quite some time with concentration practice, yet alone, and it helps because there is a way that we can feel the stability, the strength of just stillness. And also, we are free from the impingement of what happens in relationship to thoughts and all the different sense experiences, right? They're at bay. Yet, when we are not in a place of being in concentration, everything is here again. There's no resolution. No freedom in the sense of liberation, meaning uprooting what causes suffering. And this is exactly why we constantly, at least I constantly, speak about wisdom, a mindfulness and a stability of heart and mind that really leads to wisdom, because it is wisdom that liberates. There are three types of wisdom, actually. And it's spoken about in a very clear way. The fact that you are listening to the Dharma now is a type of wisdom. You're really helping yourself understand with concepts, right? Thinking about and hearing the Dharma, hearing or reading. Maybe many of us are here because we've read about the Dharma. And so, wisdom coming from outside. Then there's a second type, which is also wisdom, and it happens at the level of reflection. And no doubt that metta, for example, is part of that wisdom, where we gain knowledge, then we reflect upon that knowledge, that understanding, that wisdom, and we use then wise thought to understand. Right? So these two types are coming from the thinking mind. We use the thinking mind wisely, and there's a way that we do understand intellectually. And some reflection is naturally arising from that place where we understand maybe not to do an action again because it's just an action that will cause suffering, for example. So we reflect. Now there's the third kind of wisdom, which is called intuitive wisdom. And that is arising not from thought, but from intuition. So this is the wisdom that comes in meditation, actually. It's really called intuitive understanding, and it's based in direct experience. So this also explains, someone asked about what it means, direct experience. So direct experience means we don't need to figure it out. We don't need to have the whole array of thoughts to understand. It's something which comes from intuition, right? That word, hopefully you have also, and you understand it. You can say, not born out of thought. So this form of wisdom is called insight, right? So we practice insight dialogue, as you know, the name that was given to this practice that we did today. A dialogue which leads all the way to liberation, to insight. Now, insight is the fruit. What we actually practice is mindfulness and concentration, right? So there's a way that we are actually gaining insight, we're not actually practicing insight. And that's really quite helpful to understand. Insight comes, right? It's the fruit, you can say, or the effect, right? We're practicing a continuity of mindfulness that helps us see clearly when we're caught, where we're caught, and how we can free the mind from being caught. So now, really helping ourselves to understand how to relate to ourselves and with other beings, because there is relationship, in a changing world, which is quite quick nowadays, with balance and with compassion. This is a way that we can really infuse that it's not insight and it's just an abstract idea. Then it really is helping us to understand that this insight has to grow in wisdom in relationship to our lives, so that it's transformative, not only just for ourselves, but transformative in relationship to changing our relationship to the world. So we feel more balance. So we feel more compassion, more care, more kindness. This is what meditation is about. So we develop the mind. And you may have really experienced what Frank Herbert says, to be with oneself, he says, is the hardest task of the universe. And it's so true that maybe there is a way that we get a little bit frustrated, irritated, or even depressed, sometimes despair in relationship with what we're meeting in ourselves. But there's always a place where we are allowing ourselves to come back into balance. And that's so helpful. How can we bring balance to the mind? Get some stability so we see clearly. We apply mindfulness. We deeply learn from what causes happiness, what causes suffering. We deeply learn not to make the same mistakes again. If we have an interest, if we have an investigation, that quality of mindfulness which I talked about the second evening, that has discernment, there's an intelligence in that mindfulness. It's not just presence, right? And I talked about that the other evening. So it's helpful. Then we really understand that even if there is a misfortune of being a human being which knows suffering and at times is at the mercy of the mind that's frantic or crazy or really all over the place, there's incessant thoughts, for example, or emotions, or at times even paralyzing fears, all the different turmoils that can happen, obsessive desires, that's also possible, right? These are the misfortunes. But the wonderful aspect of this, it's really, I feel, a blessing, is that we can become and really relate as a human being, we have this extraordinary capacity to wake up to our reality and to work with these minds, to really transform, transmute the turbulent mind towards freedom. And this is a rare opportunity that human beings, the humankind, have, because we can be conscious of what is happening. We're not just following a path unconsciously or to a very small sense of consciousness like maybe other beings. And I'm not going to mention any, because there's plenty of judgments, like animals are more intelligent than we are, so I don't know. I have no opinion about that, but I do know that we do have a level of consciousness where we sense what is helpful and what is not helpful, and we can really retrack our path to learn to be kind, compassionate, and caring towards ourselves rather than harmful. And this is quite extraordinary. So, ordinary beings don't have often this notion that there is an awareness of awareness, that we can actually be working at a sustained level, right? Of course, awareness we have, but at a sustained level where we can work with the mind to create a potential for liberation, which really becomes something completely real for us, very true. It's not a far kind of driven, it's going to be happening, you know, sometime, maybe in 10 lives or who knows when. Here and now, as the Buddha says, abandoning all clinging and anxiety and awaken an unshakable freedom of heart, here and now, in each moment that we are awake. Fantastic. Beautiful. So we can inhabit this reality. And if we trust it, if there's a kind of trust, confidence that this is possible, then no doubt that the Dharma will deepen its course within our own track, our own sense of being, and it will also be manifesting, expressing itself in the world. No doubt. This is extraordinary. Now, how do we work with these minds? So, you probably heard, if you've heard me before, I've said this story before, if you've heard this talk. So, it's one of my favorite stories. So, there's a Chinese painter who paints fantastically well. And one day he decides to paint a fantastic tiger on a wall. So he makes it, he takes days to paint this tiger, right? So the stripes and the whisks, and he's great. And so he takes a few steps back, he looks at the tiger, he runs away. Because it looks so real. He's scared to see his own painting, right? This is exactly what happens in relationship to thoughts, right? As someone said, we create universes in relationship to what we construct. It's amazing. And we live in this constructed world of thought, not connecting at all with the reality at times. Blown away. And yet, by creating these universes, we know so little about them. Therefore, they take over the reality, right? So we create over and over again mini universes, and sometimes not mini, with thoughts, and then we believe that they are the truth, right? So we need to question the belief. Is this true? We don't question that they are true. We take these thoughts to be the truth. This is my truth. This is the way I am. And this is the way this person is. And so we are discerning, and mindfulness helps us to really question the beliefs that we begin to have in relationship to these thoughts. That's one of the first steps that mindfulness practice, meditation, in a vipassana way, can help us do. Thought themselves are not the problem. They are a function of the mind. Right? In the same way that the body breathes, it's its function, right? The mind will think. And it's totally crazy to think that we can actually stop the mind. We can for a few moments, but there are practices where we are really going to be stopping the mind. We don't need to do this. It takes a lot of energy. And it's not very fruitful. Much more useful and fruitful, at least for me, in my own practice, to see exactly what is this thought saying? What is this thought actually informing? So we don't meditate to stop thinking. Now we don't meditate and let the mind proliferate endlessly. Right? Because otherwise we're never actually in the reality. So this is fantastic, because then what do we do? What do we do? Is there another option? Actually, there is. Right? So it takes time to integrate the fact that maybe we need to understand that meditation process at the level of experience, remember that we're not thinking, but we're meditating at this intuitive level, based in experience, which means that we're not analyzing, we're not trying to figure out, and this is very important for the people who are new, because some people say, I just don't understand, I'm trying to figure it out, and what this means, and what this means, and we spend a lot of time, and of course we want to use the skill that we have, because we know how to think. So we're going to be using that, no doubt. Yet, figuring out or thinking over and over again is not going to give us the solution. So we're not figuring out, we're not analyzing. We're basically living from a place where we are aware. Direct experience. From the place of awareness, thought can be seen for thought. And I like the way Mingyur Rinpoche puts this. This is a Tibetan teacher that I have. He says, thoughts are a bit more elusive than bodily sensations or sounds. At first, they rush and tumble like water rushing over a cliff. You can't really see them. But by paying attention to them in the same way that you are paying attention to sounds or visual objects, you can come to an awareness of their passage, meaning coming and going. In so doing, you can become aware of the mind through which all these thoughts appear and disappear. Actually being aware of the mind that is thinking. Thinking, he says, is the natural activity of the mind, an expression of the mind's capacity to produce anything. So nothing wrong, except that if we're not aware of them, then we're completely lost in the construct, right? So we don't get rid of the thoughts, we don't reinforce them, we don't kind of get lost in them, we just notice them, are aware of them as they come and go. Now this takes practice, I can tell you. It does take practice, but it's totally possible. And it's extraordinary to be in one moment and suddenly you are completely present, aware, not lost, not caught in the thought, and you just see the nature of thought in the same way that you can see the nature of sensation. Meaning, as a process. Born from a place, a steadiness of awareness. Right?
causes and conditions, they come and go. Experiences never stay the same, right? A sound, a sensation, a thought. It's seen. Oh, thought, right? Now, it's fascinating because a lot of meditators get very frustrated working with thoughts because they're so elusive, right? They're just like a bubble in a stream. Much more than sensations. This is why we first begin with body. You want to work with thoughts? And just the other day, a meditator in some other country was saying, I'm getting so frustrated when you say that we can work with the thoughts. He says, I said, why? And he says, the second they're seen, they're already gone. And this is exactly what happens, is that you want to be aware, but what happens? Yes, they don't have any substance, the thoughts in themselves. And then I said, doesn't it make you be able to see the nature of mind itself? Which is exactly what is happening. We see, we are able to be, in the moment that thought is gone, you are still experiencing something, nature of mind. And then very naturally, a thought may come again. So, thoughts are happening and are an experience of that quality of mind. Yet, when not noticed, they really are a trouble for us. So many opinions and views are born out of thoughts. And so many people today have what we call unwise attention. We are cultivating wise attention, right? Sammasati. There's no doubt that unwise attention, you may have thoughts that can really create a lot of trouble. And when you see the violence that is happening in this world, it just doesn't happen just like that. It happens because people have these thoughts. Right? You have a thought, and how does it start? How does a war start? Wars, they're born out of one person's mind, right? In the same way that the fantastic discoveries that we can have today in medicine, for example, they're also born out of thoughts, right? So the mind has this huge power, this capacity to produce something wonderful or something horrific. So helpful for us to begin to really sense what I convey, what I say, what I begin to realize, that when we are a little bit, even 2% aware of thoughts, we also create an environment that is going to be clearly beneficial and peaceful and clear for ourselves and for others, rather than not. Right? So, how do thoughts proliferate? Well, it's very simple. One thought leads to another thought, to another thought, to another thought, and this is a story. That's what happens, right? It's just one conditioning another. Like, just like, you know, you have abrasive, like seeds, right? Or beads. You can say one bead, two beads, two. Then you have a chain of beads. Here you have a story. This is exactly what happens, right? One thought after another. And this is called papancha. I really like that word. Papancha means proliferation, meaning that it's the snowball effect, right? The snowball goes down and it increases, and this is how it becomes a huge story. And we can see this in our practice. You know, we have a little teeny sensation that maybe is just a little bit painful. And the thought, oh my gosh, what if this increases? I've had this so many times. It's amazing. It's so embarrassing. Because we know it, you know. We know that we create these universes. And yet, it happens. So if you're not watchful, if you're not present and not mindful, suddenly you're ending in hospital by the end of the sit, right?
Or in a wheelchair.
This is exactly what happens, the proliferation of mind, of thoughts. So we really need to be clear. As soon as you begin to see that, ooh, papancha's coming, aware. What happens with awareness? There is a way that we are not feeding this process, the proliferation. As simple as that, right? And back to reality. My little painful sensation in one part of the body. That's the reality, right? And it's so helpful because if we come to terms to being able to do this on a cushion, no doubt that with probably a story which may concern, I don't know, my mother or my children or my work, right, or my relationship, whatever, we have exactly the same wheel of conditioning where we go round and circle and it becomes really huge. So helpful to be here. And in the inside dialogue practice where we can sense this as we're speaking and as we're listening, there's the same process that we can be aware of. Mark Twain said, "My life has been filled with terrible misfortunes, most of which never happened." It's such a great line. I mean, we can equate to this line. Every one of us can, right? It's just amazing. Now, sometimes there is drama, I'm not saying, right? But a lot of the time, it's just incredible, right? So we want to learn how to not get hijacked, right, by these stories. It's really one of the greatest aspects of this practice, actually. It's huge what we can learn from this aspect. So mindfulness breaks these patterns. We become aware. We live with less burden. We see the story for the story, and we don't get caught in reactivity in relationship to the story. Because there's no doubt that if I have a judgment and I have a judging thought, we don't like it, so we have aversion, right? And so this is the cycle of reactivity towards the thoughts, which of course is something which just increases the thinking, right? So when we want to get rid of the thought, this is aversion to thought, we're actually feeding the thoughts. Very helpful to know this, right? We think, oh, okay, let me get free of these thoughts. So we push them away. First attitude, of course. And what happens? You get entangled and then you have aversion. You get caught and then you suffer because you're in aversion in relationship to the thoughts. They proliferate. That's another type, right? So here are a few lines from Sayadaw Utegunye, who is another teacher whom I've been working with lately. He's come to Finland, no? Yes, I think he has, right? Yeah, he's now in the U.S. at IMS. So he says, "When the mind is thinking or wandering, just be aware of it. Thinking is a natural activity of the mind." You notice, this is a Burmese teacher, right? I read from the Tibetan teacher. Same words. "You are doing well if you are aware that the mind is thinking. But if you are disturbed by thoughts, or if you have a reaction or judgment of them, there is a problem with your attitude. The wandering mind is not the problem. Your attitude that they should not be around is the problem." What another take, right? So understand that you have just become aware of some functions of the mind. These two are just objects for your attention. Thinking is a mental activity. You should not try to watch thinking continuously. Neither should you try to avoid observing thoughts by immediately going to your anchor. When you realize that you are thinking, pay attention to the thought first and then remind yourself that a thought is just a thought, and then you may reconnect with your anchor. The point here is, do not think of it as my thought, meaning that we identify, we engage in a way that we own the thought. It's part of a changing process. And so every time we say my thought, we identify with the thought as being mine, and this is exactly how we are staying in trouble, confusion, and entanglement. Right? So not identifying comes very clearly, very naturally. It's kind of a characteristic of the mind that when there is no cling, it's just awareness. Like I was telling you this afternoon, right? There's more spaciousness. If awareness is strengthened, you grow in awareness. Where's the me? Me, I, is a concept. It's an idea. It's just another thought. My thought is a thought. So we begin. This may be a little difficult for the beginners, but this is the idea, right? So when you feel disturbed by thinking mind, remind yourself that you are not practicing to prevent thinking, but rather to recognize and acknowledge thinking whenever it arises. The fact that you recognize that you are thinking means that you are aware. So this is exactly when I said the other day, monkey mind is not a problem. Monkey mind helps us pay attention and reveals awareness, not the reverse, right? Thinking means that you are aware. So, very clearly, this is the picture for working with thoughts. And if you're less stuck in believing the thoughts, it's great. If you're very stuck, then you really need to use the second type of wisdom, and you really relate, not just awareness, but what is this thought saying? And you are giving a little bit of interest to the meaning, meaning that you are looking at the aspect of what does this thought mean, right? This is a story I'm telling myself. What is fueling it? And very often, if there's a recurrent thinking pattern, some thoughts, they're just discursive thoughts, right? What am I going to do tomorrow? Or should I take a shower now or later or whatever? Right? Not very substantial, right? I mean, so many thoughts like that, right? Or commentary, or, oh, this looks nice. I like this sweater on this person, or you know, all the very little thoughts that come and go, which we have all the time, right? But sometimes there are recurrent thoughts, like, they have substance, and we may have had them for quite some time, some thoughts, years, you know? The belief may be that I'm a judging person, or I'm a worthless person. Believe it or not, I thought for a long time that I would not be able to be happy because I'm short. I had that thought, right? It's amazing. But that was a recurring thought, you know, and it was, wow, how are you going to be happy with this? So, it can be tricky at times. So it means that here we need to touch what is underneath. And underneath, there's no doubt that there is an underlying emotional state. When these thoughts are really recurrent and they bug you and they come again and again, there's most probably some emotional state that is beneath. And so you really want to look at, okay, there's just, you know, the thoughts, but there maybe is an emotion. Now, emotions, they're quite something. It's very tricky to relate to emotion because it's a constellation. It's not like just sensation. Sensation and emotion are not the same, right? We can have sensation, like contraction, and maybe no emotion. And there can be clearly a component that is emotional. Like contraction may mean that there's a sadness attached, for example, or anxiety. So, how do we usually deal when emotion arises? Well, mostly, when we're not aware, we drown in them. They suck us up, right? Completely lost in sadness, anxiety, worry, whatever. Especially the unpleasant ones or the painful ones, right? Or the other way is we act them out. And this is exactly how we can see that there is so much violence. People are frustrated today in many parts of the world. They are unhappy. And what happened is that they have some boiling emotion happening there. But because they're not connecting with what's happening in there, what happens is it's painful, they act out. It's just acted out. It's kind of projected outwardly. And so they hit someone or they just really do something not good at all. And these are the two ways, right? So we drown or we act out. The third way actually is avoiding. We deny and stay at a distance, stay busy. So with my little story about not being tall enough and really feeling unhappy, thinking I'm never going to be happy in my life and I was not going to find a man or whatever the story was then, right? Underneath, when I was looking, it was just fascinating to notice that actually there was a very clear emotional component which I slowly recognized with practice. It was fear. Right? So the thought level is one thought level, but then, wow, there was really a sense of fear beneath that very superficial thought, I'm not tall enough, right? So nobody's going to like me. So you begin to be mindful of the emotion. It doesn't mean that you're leaving the construct, but you are working interconnectedly with one level is the thought construct and the other level is the emotion. And to find emotion, it's very helpful if you have a sense of ground of body experience. Because to learn to be with emotional experience in a balanced way is not so easy. Again, we can easily get lost and therefore the thoughts will fuel the emotion if we don't know how to relate. So a balance of mind is actually quite helpful. We turn our attention on the emotion and we investigate it. So what is an emotion? It's really a mix of thoughts, body sensations, and naturally there's a way that there's an overlay on the sensation of feelings, right? Now there is clearly a very useful kind of map, you can say, in relationship to all of these patterns for any experience, whether bodily sensation or thoughts or emotions or even relationship with another being. And it's kind of, you can see four parts to our practice, how the practice unfolds and what happens when we are working at this level of relating to experience, whether it is in inside dialogue or in vipassana, regular. The first step with mindfulness is recognition, right? We recognize. We're really present. Knowing what's happening. Usually we don't know what's happening, so we know what's happening. Without being present, without connection, there's nothing happening. So that's the pause, right? In inside dialogue. Then the second step is acceptance or allowing. How can I allow this? This allowing is mindfulness, actually, because there is then no judgment. No judgment and no aversion, right? So whatever is happening, we can receive. And we begin to have a way that we are allowing more and more, because we're more stable and we're less afraid to feel. This is exactly what is happening. The less we are afraid to feel, the more we're going to be allowing. Very natural, right? How does it happen? By practicing, right? So this is relax in inside dialogue, right? Aiming towards an attitude which is inclining towards non-judgmental attention, right? The third quality is that we stabilize our interest. And this is exactly what we did this afternoon. Once we're present, we recognize and we allow and we accept. This takes time. There's patience to this process. And I said, it's not happening just like that, right? It really means that it takes time to just receive. And how does this happen? With interest. We grow with continuity of presence. So this interest, sustained attention, is open in inside dialogue. Pause, relax, open, right? Becoming interested to see it all inclusive, nothing left out. This is the acronym, if you want to remember this in English, RAIN. R-A-I, I haven't mentioned N yet. Right? If you're attentive, you realize that. If you're not, you didn't realize. So RAIN, does it work in Finnish? No. Not at all. RAIN? No. Okay, so you have English. RAIN. And of course it's not, okay, now recognize, now allow, now interest. It can really be completely in another order, okay? Because we never know what we're going to be meeting, right? But naturally, mindfulness, interest. And then I can allow, right? The fruit of this is exactly what we call freedom. And the N stands for non-clinging. That's the fruit. That's the wisdom. That's the kind of cherry on the pie. We are enabling a process where there's openness, there's spaciousness, we're just not caught in the crutch of entanglement. Freedom is the absence of clinging. We don't need to make anything, we just are allowing. And of course, this is the most difficult to understand because it is happening only in intuitive awareness. This is an experiential happening. So don't try to figure it out. We can't figure this out, right? The thinking mind cannot go there because it's a concept. And the concept can never make you feel reality, right? So the thought can show you the way, but it cannot be the experience. Okay, so how do we feel clinging? Well, when there's stickiness, exactly that. When we're caught in attachment and aversion, that's clinging. Right? Resistance is clinging. Not wanting an experience when it's there. It's exactly that. A form. What I described last night, right? Freedom from clinging, freedom from craving. And the identification is happening at any level, whatever the experience, it can happen. And what is happening there is that we take this experience to be mine, to own it. because of the concept. This is my pain. Then it becomes very, very intolerable, right? When it's my pain and I can do something about it and we try to control. And the more we're in this kind of relationship, the less there's spaciousness and the less there's freedom. This is exactly what's happening. So how do we become free? By just noticing the way that we identify. How do we notice identify? When there's attachment, wanting and not wanting. And the third type is confusion, which is basically thinking instead of being aware. Conceptualizing instead of being aware. That's the confusion, right? Or wrong view. As mindfulness gets more powerful, this happens very spontaneously. And this is exactly what you've been noticing. There's no doubt you've had moments, as I said last night, plenty of moments of freedom where you're not entangled, right? Except we're probably not noticing them because we're so caught in trying to get them that there's a way that we are simply not noticing the obvious, because it is the obvious, actually, right? Now, as a teacher said, the present moment is the only place we can learn to be free. You can't be free in the past. You can't be free in the future. It's every moment in the present moment, right? So we deeply care to look now, here, what is happening. The trouble is, because we're craving so much to get, is that we're always leaning forward to get to the next moment, the next thing. That's kind of the problem. So with that realization, then we're never, or very likely, less able to feel the quality of freedom that comes from meditation. We can read about this and never get anywhere. So it's just so wonderful that we are in this place together where we can deeply experience and sense at times just a little bit more spacious, a lighter sense of being. And as some people said, there's anger, but there's a little bit more spaciousness. That's the freedom, that's the non-clinging, and that moment. And transformation deepens through direct experience. So connection, connection, connection. And from that, we then naturally flow and connect with the world, not from a place of anger or hostility or resentment, but from a place of balance and equanimity. It's possible. We care, we're concerned, and we just do the best we can, not only for ourselves, but for those that are in our surroundings. A lot of flexibility in the mind. That's how it feels. We can move with the events. The mind is not rigid. And it's great. It really is the powerful experience that we can feel. And we each and everyone have these qualities in ourselves. We just strengthen them. Equanimity can replace reactivity. Actually, equanimity is the absence of reactivity. Equanimity is a balanced state of mind with different conditions being the way that they are. Okay, great. So I would just like to end. With a line from the Dalai Lama, he says, "Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you become more alive. Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you more alive. Because what the world needs is more people that become alive. Let wake up. And this is exactly what we are doing. So may we rejoice for the time that we have together to be able to really deepen our sense of care, concern, kindness, wisdom, not only for ourselves, but for the world, as the Dalai Lama says. Thank you.